Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So today the Supreme Court starts a 3-day trial to decide whether or not Boris Johnson's decision to prorogue Parliament was illegal. Katie, just catch us up on how we got here.
So there have been several legal efforts to try and overturn Boris Johnson's decision to prorogue Parliament. You had one brought by Gina Miller, the anti-Brexit, we could say, campaigner, and backed by John Major, the former Prime Minister, which argued that it was unlawful. However, judges said that the suspension of Parliament is essentially a political decision for the Prime Minister. So even if he is doing it to hide scrutiny or to avoid scrutiny, that's up to him to try and do that, and that's for Parliament, not for the courts. But then we had a similar case which was brought by a cross-party group of MPs, so the SNP's Joanna Cherry led it, and that was successful in the Scottish courts because they deemed that he was trying to avoid scrutiny and that was unlawful. So you have this clash, and now it was going to the Supreme Court, and it's to find which do they agree with, and there'll be one collective decision. There have been some signs of, for example, the fact that the number of judges sitting on this has risen from 9 to 11, and people are saying that's because it could be very finely balanced and it's such an important judgment, that's why you bring more in. I think it's interesting, I mean, I am not a legal mind, I will not speak as one, but we heard from former Supreme Court Justice Jonathan Sumption on Newsnight last night saying that his view is that the orthodox opinion, so the most likely, is that the Supreme Court will side with the English court ruling, which is that is a matter for Parliament and this is politics, but made the point that because Boris Johnson is pushing conventions and is pushing the traditions of institutions to such a degree, it could be that some judges decide that actually this calls for a different look at things and could be tempted to go the other way. So we know this goes on till Thursday. There's some talk that the judgment might not actually arrive until the beginning of next week. So I think there's some way to go, and actually you can live stream it if people really want to watch all the parts. I think perhaps the popcorn moment will be when John Major, former Prime Minister, gives his statement and his view, basically going against the current Conservative Prime Minister, which seems a new level of blue on blue.
James, I mean, the decision will probably go with the English court's ruling, but how significant is a ruling like this, the precedent that it sets, tackling putting English law against Scottish law, as well as John Major's own intervention in this?
So they will decide each case on the jurisdiction from which it came from. So it won't be a matter of saying that English law overrides Scottish law. They will have to find, if they're going to overturn the verdict of a court of session, they will have to find that it is wrong in Scottish law. They can't just say, no, English law trumps Scottish law. I have to be saying that the Court of Session made the wrong decision under Scottish law. I mean, the John Major Boris Johnson thing, this is an argument between two people going back decades. When Boris Johnson first tried to get onto the Tory candidates list, John Major attempted to block it and was very cross that Boris Johnson had gone on, because John Major held Boris Johnson responsible for lots of his problems with this kind of so-called Eurosceptic bastards. He thought he had inflamed...
Because Boris at that time was a Eurosceptic Brussels correspondent.
He thought he kind of inflamed Tory opinion on all sorts of issues. So this is a kind of long-standing round. But I think we have entered a new era in British politics now, which is that things are going to just end up in the courts repeatedly. I think this isn't going to stop when this government goes. I think we are now in a position where regular legal challenges, which they're not the first time I've ever seen them before, but this is the first time we've seen such a frequency and such a volume of challenges, is just going to become part of politics now.
And what does that mean for the state of our politics? I mean, Kwasi Kwarteng last week got into trouble when he suggested that the courts would be seen as partial. But should courts have a greater say in politics? I mean, as long as it's legal and constitutional?
My personal view is that the problem here is that Parliament won't use the tools at its own disposal. I think it would be a very different thing if a government had a majority of 180 or something, you know, and could essentially ride roughshod over the Commons, whatever it wanted, because of party discipline. This is a prime minister of a majority of minus 42. If the House of Commons thinks he is abusing his executive power, they have a very simple remedy, which is they can no confidence him and they can remove him from office. They are consciously choosing not to use those tools, and that is therefore forcing the courts
right.
to take more of a role in politics. I think it would be much, much more healthy for the system if MPs attempted to use the tools that they are deliberately have been given in our constitutional arrangements to hold the government to account, rather than basically trying to get the courts to do their job for them.
And Katie, if this ruling comes out against the government saying that prorogation was illegal, how damaging would it be to the government's reputation? And what would actually happen? Would they have to recall Parliament after a conference?
So I'm not sure how damaging it would be to the government's reputation. I think we're at the point right now where there are those who want Brexit delivered very passionately, and they see this government as doing what it can to get that done, as the MPs working against that and the MPs preventing an early election as the ones frustrating the Brexit process. There are those who are also disgusted by Boris Johnson's actions and don't want this to happen, and they think that Boris Johnson is behaving in a way which is unlawful already, probably, and pushing the realms of what is possible. I think we are at the point now with Brexit that Theresa May has tried many times to bring this parliament together. Boris Johnson is effectively trapped in this parliament, trying to not able to go to an election. He could resign still, but that's not the route he wants to go out. And therefore, if it is deemed unlawful, that is just another obstacle for Number 10 to deal with as they try and work out a way to deliver Brexit, deal or no deal, by the end of October, which looks increasingly difficult to do, and whether that is through ignoring the bill, finding a way around the law, or somehow getting to an early election. So, I mean, I don't think, again, it's a great thing on the government's CV, courts find their decision unlawful. But at the same time, Boris Johnson has made history in many ways. I think that he is the first prime minister to, I think, have his first six votes be consecutive defeats. But we're in very strange times, as most people who listen to this podcast regularly have probably already worked out. And I think a lot of Leave voters see Boris Johnson as the person who's trying to get this done, be it several years late and already past the first Brexit deadline.
And James, this week as well, down in Bournemouth, the Liberal Democrats have been having their party conference. How has that gone for them, Jo Swinson's first party conference as a party leader?
I personally think it's been quite effective for them. I think this revoke position is quite potent politics for two reasons. First of all, it makes them unambiguously the most pro-Remain party. There's been some criticism of the fact it's kind of anti-democratic, but I think if the Lib Dems were to win a majority, which is, you know, that would suggest that the second referendum would be pretty much a formality. But I think the other thing it does is it gives them an argument about ending this quickly. It will get a chortle, but it is more important than a chortle. The fact that polls show that one poll last the other week showed that 48% of voters just want Brexit over with, regardless of what happens. And I mean, that desire to have it over with is something that, you know, people are going to have to be able to speak to at the next election. Boris Johnson has his answer: vote for me, and we will leave on October the 31st or whatever new date is set, and it will be done. The Lib Dem argument is: vote for us, we will revoke Article 50, and it will be done. Labour's position is much more complex. It is vote for us and we might ask Brussels for some more changes. Then we'd have a referendum. That would take at least 6 months. They can't promise a speedy resolution to this. I mean, that's what the Lib Dems have done quite effectively. I also think that she has kind of... You can see why it would be in Labour and the Tories' interest to shut Swinson out of the debates, to try and go to the broadcaster and say, let's do as many Boris Johnson and Jeremy... I mean, we know this is what the Tories want. We don't know whether this is what Labour want. As many Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn head-to-heads as possible, because you can see how her manner could be quite effective in those. I think there are some challenges to Lib Dems, though. One is, you know, where are they going to end up standing on economics? Two, How do they balance out some of their policies that they've passed away? You know, we found this with Kleggmania in 2010. You know, the Lib Dems pass all sorts of policies at their conference. Then suddenly in the spotlight of a general election, they can kind of crumble away because they don't realise quite, you know, they didn't think about it at the time. I mean, Clegg's problem was an amnesty for illegal immigrants. You know, you can see, you know, is the Lib Dem policy of punitive taxation on flights, for example, going to be the kind of 2019 or election version of that. So, I mean, those are the challenges. But, I mean, overall, they've, you know, they've added to a sense of momentum, unveiling another new MP. You know, Sam Keevan seems to have bought some special Lib Dem-coloured trousers for the occasion. But I think one of the challenges for them is going to be, can they really come from behind in as many places they're trying to? I mean, one of the, you look at the Chuckramuno, you know, one of the, given a keynote speech yesterday, one of the biggest figures and their biggest new recruits. He is running in a seat which the Lib Dems came a very poor third in at the last election. And then that's a seat that he has chosen to run in cities of London and Westminster, because they are betting that this pro-Remain vote can transform their fortunes.
Yeah.
I mean, the question is, can you go from somewhere where you have very little infrastructure, very little previous standing, and kind of win from a standing start? I think that is the question. You know, are they essentially trying to conduct a two-election strategy in one election in lots of these places?
And Katie, Jo Swinson, at least on the face of it, insists that she won't go into coalition with Labour or with the Conservative Party. But do you really think that they will get a majority? And if they don't, isn't she just backing herself into a corner by ruling out any coalitions with either of the major parties?
Again, strange times, but I do think it's very unlikely the Lib Dems are about to get a majority in a general election. We've had some talk, you know, they could get 200 seats. You look at the target seats the Lib Dems are going for, and you quite quickly run into very high margins in terms of the majorities they would need to overturn. Mm. If you look at the Labour seats that perhaps the Lib Dems could win back, I think top 50, there are 7 Labour seats that are potentially there. But as soon as you get to Cambridge, you're in a majority, I think, of over 20,000 that they would need to overturn. So it's very tricky just on a logistical level. Perhaps we're now in this Remain Leave access, but even then, I think that it makes sense for Jo Swinson to try and avoid the question of who she is going to go into coalition with. There's also a difference between going into coalition with someone and perhaps being a confidence supply partner or supporting a minority government on certain votes. So I can see why it's an electoral pitch. It's also, I mean, I understand that one of the things they got back when Tim Farron was leader, and they do a Lib Dem membership survey to basically see how everyone felt about that leader, or, you know, an election, was Lib Dem members didn't like the idea that Tim Farron didn't say, he said he could be the most effective opposition. He never said he could be prime minister. And apparently that's one of the things that came back, was Lib Dem members didn't like that. They wanted it to be more ambitious. So I don't think anyone's taking Jo Swinson at her word, but I think as a strategy, it does make sense, because she doesn't want to get tied down into the fact that Jeremy Corbyn, you know, how could you support Jeremy Corbyn? If you could support Jeremy Corbyn, why not just vote Labour? Why bother voting Lib Dem? And vice versa, the Conservatives. I do think that it does add to this idea, though, which is, I think if the Tories don't get enough seats for a majority, perhaps if they were very close, they could go back to this DUP arrangement. But it's very tricky to see how they would achieve much with that in terms of what they want to get done. If the Tories can't get a majority, they are effectively, without that option, potentially working out of friends. I think it's very hard to see the Lib Dems doing a deal with the Tories. There is a view that the Labour Party could form potentially a minority government in a much easier way. You could see the various people they could work with. The fact that you have this rebel alliance right now, which is basically dictating terms for the Prime Minister, and it's seen Jeremy Corbyn speaking to the SNP, speaking to the Lib Dems. So I think that if you were to have a situation where you have Labour not winning enough seats for a majority, perhaps teaming up for the SNP but then needing a couple more seats, I think that would put the Lib Dems in a tricky spot. I think that Jo Swinson has made such a big thing of Jeremy Corbyn's character personally, it would be tricky for her to then enter an arrangement. But the concern, and perhaps the hope of some in the Labour Party, is that if you get to a situation where Labour have enough seats to form a minority government, you end up with Jeremy Corbyn coming under pressure to stand aside and getting a different Labour leader, less divisive. And I think Jo Swinson has given her enough space that she could prop up a Labour government led by someone like Keir Starmer.
Interesting. And James, this week Jo Swinson actually gave an interview in which she sounded a bit more like the Tory party.
Well, I mean, I think the problems with the Conservatives' current plans is there's no detail about how they're going to pay for them, and they're, you know, suggesting they're going to have a magic money tree.
So you think Conservatives should carry on?
No, what I'm saying, well, sometimes it's about making tough choices and about recognising where you need to make taxation decisions as well as spending decisions. And, you know, we will be straightforward and set out our plans at the forthcoming election whenever it is upon us.
James, the language he uses here, you know, tough choices, magic money tree, that's exactly the sort of stuff that David Cameron said in last night's interview.
view.
Yes, but not what Boris Johnson would say, who's obviously much more fiscally lax than David Cameron. I think this is an interesting question. One of Jeremy Smithson's pitches will be that Boris Johnson's a populist of the right and Jeremy Corbyn's a populist of the left, and the Lib Dems represent the in heavily air quotes here, the rational centre. I think there's a problem, which is, on economics, both Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn will have an offer to voters.
Yeah.
The Tory offer is going to be, you know, increased public spending on things like the police, the NHS, education, and tax cuts. The Labour offer is going to be increased public spending on pretty much everything under the sun, and by more than the Tories. The Lib Dems are trying to kind of steer a middle course. You heard in that clip Joe Smithson suggesting there would be some spending increases, but also some tax rises to pay for them. I mean, you can argue in a way maybe this won't matter because the election's going to be about Leave versus Remain, but it does show you some of the difficulties for the Lib Dems. I think there is also, as Katie was saying about the Lib Dem-Tory relationship in the election, there is a Lib Dem paradox here. If the Lib Dems do quite well in the election, so let's say they get 14-15% of the vote, that is a disaster for the Tory party because they will have taken a slew of Tory seats but won't have done damage to Labour. If the Lib Dems are up nearer 20% or at 20%, then suddenly the Lib Dems become the Tories' best friends because the chunk of the Labour vote that the Lib Dems have taken would mean that a whole bunch of Labour Tory marginals would turn blue because the Tories would be sufficiently far ahead of Labour. You know, we can go into all sorts of complicated seat modelling about which seat the Tories will do well in. There are a whole bunch of seats that fall to the Tories if they are just sufficiently ahead of Labour. If they are ahead of Labour by something like 8-9 points, is what one cabinet minister said to me late last week, then they will just start getting seats. And in a way, it won't matter the question of where precisely the target is. So I think that is the kind of Lib Dem paradox right now.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe, rate and review this podcast through all the usual routes. And do let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you at podcast@spectator.co.uk. And if you have any questions to ask James, Katie, Fraser or anyone else, then do send them in as well. And we'll see if we can get around to them as well. Thanks for listening and join us again later today, probably.